This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
All right, well, not really Tony Perkins today. Sandy Rios filling in for Tony Perkins. Always happy to do that. Tony is away doing something important, I'm sure. I host the morning show for American Family Radio, Sandy Rios in the Morning. It's at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, for those of you that don't know that. And I also represent the American Family Association as the Director of Governmental Affairs in Washington, D.C. So that's and I've been in radio for a long, long time, longer than I've been doing public policy. So this is always a pleasure for me. Well, we want to talk today about the Affordable Health Care Act, but that new one, the Ryan Care Plan, I believe we should be calling it, because I think that it's obvious that Paul Ryan has a emotional vested interest in this particular bill. It was just introduced the very first part of just a few days ago. And so now they, like it seems, the Democrats want to push it through very quickly. On some level, we understand that because President Trump promised that he would repeal Obamacare. So did every single one of them who ran. They promised they would repeal Obamacare. You know, looking at kind of the assessment of what Obamacare has done to the economy, let me give you some stats. They are estimating that Obamacare has cost $19 billion in lost wages, 10,000 plus fewer business establishments to be settled, nearly 300,000 lost jobs, $51 billion in costs, and more than 172 million dollars or million hours of paperwork compliance. So, that's just, and not to mention all of the nightmare stories that we have heard through the years. Many of you could probably call in and tell your own story about how your premium has gone up so high that you can barely make the payments, and then your deductible is so high that you might as well not have insurance because you would go in and you have to pay for almost everything. And then, of course, there are lots of low-income people who have not paid much in and don't pay and get tax subsidies, and they're happy. They're often young. They're not often sick, and so it's been, I think, a benefit to them. But for the vast majority of taxpaying Americans, it has been a terrible burden, and it certainly has done damage to the economy and has not finished doing damage to the economy. So President Donald Trump ran on repealing it, and so did Mitch McConnell, and so did Nancy Pelosi, probably. She said that somewhere. And so did the members of the House leadership. They were going to repeal Obamacare. In fact, they passed a bill a few years ago that was a full repeal. They passed it in the House and in the Senate. They sent it to President Barack Obama, and he refused to sign it. And so now it has gotten complicated because President Donald Trump is not a policy person. He understands, I think he has great intuition when it comes to the meat of things. I think he sees through the heart of things, but he doesn't understand all the details. After all, he's been running a billion-dollar business. He's been in business interests. That's what he knows. So he doesn't know the nuts and bolts of healthcare, and he also, I think, has a kind heart. So he said, while he was campaigning, that he started saying repeal and replace. So the problem with that was that the Republican leadership took that to heart, and they decided it was their big chance to get another one of, I think, one of their big government initiatives, this time in healthcare. Last time we had a big fight like this, it was over immigration. It was over just the, you know, they claimed that they were running on stronger borders and enforcing the immigration bills. But when they got in office, they didn't do anything about it because they really weren't about that. They were about amnesty and pleasing and gaining more Hispanic voters for the Republican Party. So this is kind of what we see happening here. They ran on repealing Obamacare, but the bill that they're proposing does not repeal it. It repeals some of it. It replaces it with other things that are just as egregious. For instance, you know, under the Obamacare health care plan, there's a tax penalty as a mandate. And if you don't buy insurance, you get a tax penalty. But so that's done away with. Yes, sure enough. But here's the problem. Under this new plan written by Ryan and whoever else, the mystery people behind him, who they won't seem to let us know who they are, but many of us feel that they are lobbyists on K Street and certainly the Chamber of Commerce, who seem to always pull the strings with leadership in the House and in the Senate as well, on the Republican side, and I think on the Democratic side too. So on this new plan, it's not a mandate or a tax levied on you if you don't buy it, but here's what it is. If you let your premium lapse for more than 60 days in a calendar year, the next year, the insurance company is allowed to increase your premium by 30%. 30%. Not just for 1 month, 2 months, but I'm not sure for how long, at least for another year. 30%. So, yeah, you don't have a tax penalty, but you have a penalty from a private company. And so there are other things. There are many, many more things. In fact, we're waiting for Congressman Dave Brett to call us because he knows all about this. And we'll get him on in just a second. The House Freedom Caucus has, of course, been taking the brunt of this. It's, you know, this is when we must really respect and honor and appreciate the men and women who serve us in Congress. I realize that we criticize them a lot. I certainly do my share of that. But let me tell you that those men and women who really do run for office in order to be public servants pay a very great price. And while you and I are going about our business, they are having sleepless nights. They are fighting battles on our behalf. And this is one of them. And let me explain why. Let me just say that the leadership in the House and the Senate on the Republican side are not fans of conservatives. It's been amazing to me that in the past 8 years of Barack Obama's presidency, that when they finally did seem to show anger on anything, it was always toward conservatives. They were never angry with President Obama. They never seemed to be angry with Harry Reid or Nancy Pelosi. At least they always used to say things like, they shouldn't have done that. That was not worthy of the senator. But they never said the blasting things that they did to conservatives. And they have tried on more than one occasion, and successfully in many cases, to purge both houses of conservatives because they are icky, bothersome kinds of people, those people that serve in the Senate and the House who actually want to do the people's business. And I would say that there are very few of them now. In the House, there is the Freedom Caucus, which I think are our heroes for the moment. They are led by Congressman Mark Meadows, Jim Jordan of Ohio, Dave Brown of Virginia, Raul Labrador, and I from Idaho, and others. And they are just working. And so they've looked at this bill that Paul Ryan is so excited about and claiming that they must pass it or else they are undermining President Trump's agenda. They look at this bill and they say, no, this is not good. This is costly. This is not a free market plan. This is big government. This is not the way the United States does business. We are not a socialist country. We are not Europe. We are a free society. We do not provide everything for everybody. We believe that people should work and take personal responsibility. And the harder they work, the more money they make, the better the things they can buy, the more they can provide for their family. We've always had a safety net for people who have health problems. We've had Medicaid for the very poor. We don't turn people away from our emergency rooms if they are very poor and they're in crisis. We have ways of there are private foundations who take care of people with terrible, expensive illnesses. But we have ways of providing, but we can't as a country and as a sovereign nation and as a people with finite resources, and by the way, with $20 trillion plus in debt, provide every health care need for every American citizen. And yet that's what it seems the Republican leadership is pushing, because that's what the Democrats had. Now we were going to produce our version of this. And so, but what they claim that it is not. So the House Freedom Caucus wants something, I think, very simple and common sense. They want to separate repealing Obamacare, which they swore to the people when they were elected they would do, and so did the leadership. They'd like to separate that from a bill that actually fleshes out what this new model might look like. And I shall cease my dialogue here, because someone who knows much more about it has just joined us. Congressman Dave Brett represents the 7th District in Virginia. You remember that he made his fame, and rightfully so, when he defeated Eric Cantor, the majority leader. Dave was a professor of economics before he came into the Congress, and so he has unique qualifications to talk about these things. He serves on the Budget Committee, and he is a proud member of the Freedom Caucus. And Dave, thanks for joining us. Congressman Brad, are you there?
Hey, Sandy, I've got a fairly weak connection. Could you just repeat the question one quick second?
Surely. You know what? I just gave you a very nice introduction. I didn't really ask you a question, but I will now.
Oh, super.
Okay, so tell me, in a nutshell, why does the Freedom Caucus have such a problem with this bill? What's wrong with it?
Yeah, well, Jim Jordan is about as good as you can get. And he says it's basically as simple as keeping your word to the American people. When you say you're going to repeal something, they expect to repeal. And when you're done with this repeal and replace, it's got way too many of the components of the Obamacare three-legged stool. It's still got the mandate turns into a 30% penalty, and then we're adding another entitlement piece, and the major issue we have is the insurance regulations stay in. And so the insurance regs are hard to understand, but the average person knows what they look like. Right now, when you go out to buy an insurance premium, you can't buy a catastrophic premium anymore. There are what's called essential health benefits that are mandated by your federal government, and that's the problem. We're trying to get away from a federally government-run healthcare system that just crashed and burned under Obamacare. And the major reason was we paid all attention to coverage and no attention to price. And so President Trump is a better businessman. He knows you have to pay attention to price and quality and service. And so that's one of his major goals, is try to get shopping across state lines to drive those prices down and get rid of the regulation.
Congressman, there are so many things to ask you, so I'm going to try to do it quickly. Let me just ask you before I go into this. Our segment is only 2 more minutes. Can you stay a few more? If you can't stay, that's fine. But if you can, 5 more minutes, I'll take them.
Yeah, sure. I got about 5 more.
Okay. All right. Then let me proceed with the question. You guys met. I know things were not looking good last week because it seemed as though the leadership had the full attention of President Trump, and he was actually hinting that he was going to come after those of you that opposed this bill because he promised a repeal and replace, and he was convinced by them that this was the bill. You guys had a meeting, the Freedom Caucus, with him last Thursday. Do you think it was fruitful?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, number one, all the conservative groups, right, that supported Trump are against this, right? I mean, every major conservative group and the conservative congressmen and the conservative free market senators and all the conservative think tanks. And so Trump is a very loyal guy with a big heart. And so he's hearing from the base right now, and he knows who put him over the top. And so yeah, he's listening and he's being responsive. And so we're going to try to get some, you know, we're not talking about tinkering around a little bit here. There are some fundamental considerations that we all believe in and that we believe we promised the American people. And so we got some heavy lifting, but it's very doable. We can get it done in a few weeks.
All right, Congressman Dave Brad is my guest. We have to take a very brief break. When we come back, we'll have him for just a few minutes more. There's so much to say, and this has so much importance to all of us who are Americans. Our health care is very personal. It's the way in which big government can control your life. That's what we don't want. We'll be right back. This is Washington Watch. Sandy Rios filling in for Tony Perkins.
Whoa, we have not had a response like this before. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We've been doing these spiritual heritage tours for like 20 years. We're sold out for June already, if you can believe that. We've got space left on our September tours of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, and then Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. We call them spiritual heritage tours, and I don't know how long these September seats will last. So what do you attribute that to, someone might ask? Maybe it's the fact that we have a new person occupying the White House. Maybe that has something to do with it. But in any event, we welcome you to come with us on our September Spiritual Heritage Tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon. and Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. Those are two separate trips. You can do both, or you can do one or the other. We'd love to have you. Go to spiritualheritagetours.com. spiritualheritagetours.com.
How would you describe your health care? If you're like most Americans these days, the word affordable isn't top of mind. Well, here's some good news. There's actually a trusted healthcare option that is affordable. It's called MediShare. Unlike insurance, MediShare is Christian healthcare sharing, a community of more than 200,000 believers across America who share each other's medical expenses. It's about half the cost of insurance, and it's fully acceptable under the law. And here's the best part. Because MediShare is based on biblical principles, you never pay for things that go against your beliefs. MediShare is affordable healthcare for Christians.
Learn how thousands of Christians can help you save on your healthcare. For your free information guide, call 855-PSALM-23. Not available in Montana. MediShare, affordable biblical healthcare. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
From Samaritan's Purse and Franklin Graham comes Facing Darkness. In 2014, as the Ebola virus was devastating West Africa,
the numbers of new cases and deaths are still rising.
International relief organization Samaritan's Purse stepped up.
God has called us to care for the dying, to care for those that are suffering.
We can't say we're Samaritan's Purse and not help.
My phone rang. One of our doctors, Kent Brantley, as Ebola.
And then David looked at me and he said, you too have Ebola.
We're there to save life. We're there in your name. Why?
Despite the fact that things were out of control, we knew that God was in control.
God puts you in places and supplies the strength to deal with.
Jesus Christ didn't run. We run to the fire. We don't run away from it.
Facing Darkness, a true story of faith. In select cinemas for one night only, Thursday, March 30th. For theaters and tickets, go to facingdarknessmovie.com. That's facingdarknessmovie.com.
All right, it's Washington Watch. Sandy Rhea is filling in for Tony Perkins, and my guest is Congressman Dave Brat from the 7th District in Virginia. And Congressman, the CBO, of course, came out yesterday with a scoring of this Ryan health care bill. That's the best way I can name it right now. And there are a lot of things to say about that, but you're an economist, so I would love to know what your assessment was about that report.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of numbers in there, and they do what they're going to do. It all has to do with budgeting and how they score, you know, revenues and taxes and spending, whatever. And you don't need to pay a whole lot of attention. The one thing I will say that the Ryan bill proponents are coming out and saying it's going to save 10%. But I do want to comment on that because that's the piece I'm interested in. And so I got a few points to make on that. So they're saying there's a 10% savings, but that only comes 3 years down the line, after 3 years. The first 3 years, you're not going to witness those price declines. And what do you think is going to happen to the politics in the meantime when people aren't seeing price declines? And then secondly, why do you get those price declines? And unbelievably, it's because you get rid of one insurance thing. You get rid of the platinum, gold, bronze thing. And that produces huge savings. So imagine what would happen if we got rid of the rest of the insurance regulation. And that's my overall point. And then the 10% saving, what does that mean? Does that mean your rates are going to go down or your deductibles are going to go down? No, it's 10% from the baseline. Well, what is the baseline? The baseline is rates are going up 25% a year under Obama. And right, everybody knows that. And so if you save 10% off of rates going up 25%, I think everybody can do the math, you're still up 15%. And so that's good, but it's not good enough. Everybody wants to see us bend the cost curve down. And Paul Ryan promised us we would do that. And so they got bucket two, which the secretary can do, right, to get rid of the insurance regs. But that comes after we vote on this piece that only requires 51 votes. So it's absolutely crucial we hold our guns and say, no, we got to have that bucket two put into law so we make it permanent, so that when you get the next Democrat president, they don't get to go right back to Obamacare, right? This is a once-in-a-century opportunity to get this stuff right. And so don't worry too much about the CBO score. Worry more about does it bend the cost curve down And are you really going to see your bottom line prices and premiums go down? And the answer is, with this bill, the part that we're voting on, the answer is no. We've got to do way more heavy lifting to get the average person what we promised them with a full repeal.
You know, I get the question has to be asked, and I have asked it, and I'll ask you again, who in the world wrote this bill? I know that the leadership is, they're not telling us. You know, Sarah Palin made the comment that they should be like NASCAR drivers. They should come down in their suits and get patches to identify who paid, you know, for what they're doing. So was it, you know, who is it? Who's making, who benefits from this bill? Can you tell by reading it?
I can tell by the silence who wrote it, right? I mean, it's always follow the money, right? So you got it right. And the best lobbyists, the most powerful ones you never hear about. So you do the math from there, right? I'm not going to.
All right, so
I think everybody knows the big, big money's in play here.
All right, so Freedom Caucus.
Here, I'll go further than that. I'll give you a hint. Everybody knows they're running ads against about 30 of us in the Freedom Caucus, right, by this American Action Network.
Yes.
It's a bunch of Boehner staffers. And guess who they're funded by?
I am afraid to ask.
Big health insurance, big pharma, nurses, all the healthcare industry. They're running ads. They all work. All never Trumpers, and now they're running ads against the conservatives who supported Trump the whole way, right? And Karl Rove's in the background of this, and there's some other connections linked up to Rank Priebus and other people, right? So it's the same old showtime, and boy, it's a little aggravating when you're on this side of those ads.
Well, you know, it reminds me very much of what they did to you guys over the issue of immigration. They all boasted
right.
and bragged and preened about how they were going to build a wall and, you know, and tighten up immigration law. And that wasn't what they meant to do. What they wanted to do was get rid of you guys. You won on that issue, Dave, in the 7th District, as I don't have to remind you. So you guys, Raul Labrador sort of challenged the president to say, hey, we're the ones that supported you. You know, those are the guys that were the never Trumpers and were trying to undermine you. So do you think that you communicated that message to the president?
It's getting through, right? Because the grassroots, thank God, are coming to the rescue as always. Thank you, people out there that are listening. You're the people that make this country run. And Trump is a loyal guy, right? He knows the evangelicals listening out there put him over the top. And I think he was humbled by the experience. He's a fun guy to be around. And people naturally like him. But you're right. I mean, he's being duped by some people that are not looking out for his best interest. So he thinks we're being probably a little bit sticklers and, you know, we're worried about all this Constitution and free market stuff, right? He's more of a businessman. And so, you know, he wants to get this thing done. So I appreciate that. But at the same time, he's hearing from the wave of conservatives out there that are not happy with this repeal because there's not a full repeal. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think he's hearing loud and clear, and I think he's going to come to the bargaining table and start pounding the fist and listen to the conservatives a little bit more. So keep it up out there. You got to keep the volume up.
All right, so Thursday, as my understanding, that the Budget Committee, of which you're a part, and there were several conservatives on that committee with you, that this is going to come before your committee. This is what I'm reading. You should know. And that it only take 4 Republican votes to actually stop this thing. Do you think that might happen Thursday?
It could happen. They delayed it a day. And so I know there's a couple, but I don't know where the other guys are going to come down. So we'll see. There's 3 Freedom Caucus folks. And then there's a couple freshmen that made pretty strong commitments on Obamacare in the past. And so we'll see. But there'll be a lot of pressure that comes down on these guys.
All right, one last question. Do you think there's any chance then that Donald Trump might come down on your side of saying, look, let's just repeal it, then we'll take a little longer with replacement?
Well, he'll want to cover, folks. He's made the commitment. He wants to find a way to cover. But I think the way to do that is by bringing the cost down substantially. Hannity's had a doctor on the past few nights that can reduce costs, I mean, by over half, he's talking. He's bidding down pharmaceutical prices 80-90% for some of his clients. And so, you know, Trump is a business guy like that. So he wants everybody to be able to afford reasonable health care. So he's going to look for a solution that's a win-win across the board, and I think we can do it together.
All right, Congressman Bratt, we need to be praying for you. I do. I told you that personally, and I'm encouraging other people listening to pray for those guys in the Freedom Caucus. Many of them are Christians, yep. And even if they're not, they are honest men who want to do the people's business.
They are.
And they need our support.
They're super people. Super. Yep.
So God bless you, David. Congressman Bratt, we'll talk to you soon.
Hey, God bless you, Sandy, and everybody out there listening. Thanks for all you do.
All right, Sandy Rios filling in for Tony Perkins on Washington Watch.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Well, the real good news in the economy is small business sentiment. The NFIB says that it did slip a little bit February, but it's still at 30-year highs, even with that slip. The sentiment gauge of the National Federation for Independent Businesses fell 0.6%. It fell to 105.3. That's slightly down about 0.9%. Now, remember, in January, when it went over 100, it was the first time in 10 years or 11 years that that had happened. So very good news. And we are looking at one of the tightest labor markets in 43 years. The labor market has not been this tight since 1974. Also, good news. Why? Because that means a couple of things. One is we are likely to see a lot more people coming back in to the workforce. That's very good news. Secondly, we are likely to see wages begin to increase in a significant way over the next 6 months. Because in a tight labor market like this, the one thing small and large businesses alike can't afford to do, and that is to lose anybody to a competitor. So likely, we are going to see higher wages in this environment. Very good news coming out of the NFIB as well is 47% indicate that the economy has improved significantly. Also, 26% say they expect higher sales.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Sandy Rios back with you. Well, of course, I'm filling in for Tony Perkins on Washington Watch. And by the way, of course, Washington Watch comes out of the studios of the Family Research Council in downtown D.C. And you can read all that FRC produces. They are like the Christian conservative think tank. They do a great job in Washington. And I know that you're proud of what they do. I certainly am. So you can reach what they're doing at FRC.org, FRC.org. Or you can go to, if you want to connect with Tony personally, it's at Tony Perkins. Oh, no, I should say it this way, at T Perkins. It's Twitter at T Perkins. That's how you can get in touch with and get on the list for Tony Perkins, and you can hear what he has to say. That's a great, fast way to get the latest information. Well, a huge story that I'm sure you've been following, and that is the whole business about Russia allegedly getting involved in our elections, the Trump campaign allegedly colluding with the Russians, and that's the reason why Donald Trump won is because the Russians wanted him to win, and they interfered in our elections, and they've been colluding with them. They met with the Russian ambassador, and on the story goes. And so Donald Trump tweeted, Sunday, I think it was, I've lost track of the days, that Barack Obama had ordered wiretapping of his telephone. That's basically what he said. So it's morphed into something, you know, big. Everybody says that's silly. How could he say such a thing? Ha, ha, ha. So now we have serious people, sort of, like Senator John McCain, who are coming after the president. And this is what he said this past weekend. Let's listen.
President Trump has to provide the American people, not just the Intelligence Committee, but the American people with evidence that his predecessor, former President of the United States, was guilty of breaking the law.
He doesn't really think that President Obama went up and tapped his phone personally, I think. But I think there's no question that the Obama administration, that there were actions about surveillance and other activities that occurred in the 2016 election. The president used the word wiretap, in quotes, to mean broadly surveillance and other activities.
We're going to have an open hearing on March 20th. We're going to be able to ask the director of the FBI, among others, is there any truth to this? Have they seen any evidence of this? But I don't think anyone really has any question about this, George. The only question is why the president would make up such a thing.
Okay, those are the voices of John McCain, Sean Spicer, and Adam Schiff. And so, you know, great concern and consternation. How dare the president say something so outrageous? We demand that he prove it. Even Republicans are saying that. So what is the truth here? Well, we have some ways of knowing some things. And so I've asked Larry Johnson to join us. Larry served in the CIA's Operations Center. He was the deputy director in the U.S. State Department Office of Counterterrorism. I saw him do an interview, which was captivating. And so this is the first time I've spoken to him, but I've asked him to join us today to kind of fill in some of the blanks that he's able to fill in. Larry, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Sandy. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Just a little background with you, Larry. We're going to have a short time here that we're going to break, and then we'll have a longer time. But
sure.
When did you serve with the CIA?
Well, I left the CIA in 1989, then moved to State Department, and was there from 89 to 93. But since then, I've continued to hold clearances and have worked in doing training for U.S. Special Operations Forces. It's not like I've been away from government and cut out of this for years. I've got current knowledge, in part from friends who are still well-placed on the inside of the intelligence community.
I'd just be curious, can you tell us, at least in general, what kinds of things you were involved in?
You mean back when I was with...
Yeah, when you were active duty.
Well, when I was at CIA, I was directly involved. I was the senior regional analyst for Central America. This was during the whole Contra War. And then I was involved when I moved to state with the investigation of Pan Am 103, the bombing by Libya of that commercial airliner, and was involved with helping set up a debriefing program for American citizens that were held hostage in Kuwait when Iraq invaded back in 1990. So I've had some hands-on experience with a variety of things.
Yeah, I would say so. And so I'm curious, this will be relevant. It may not sound, but it is. How in the world did you find your way into the CIA? I guess short version. How in the world did the person get into
it? I've been living in Argentina. I came back and needed a job. And I applied in 1985, in March of 1985, and CIA was on a hiring bench back then. I had the advantage that I spoke Spanish at State Department scale. They rated you 1 through 5, 5 being native. I was a level 4 Spanish speaker. And I had actually lived in Honduras and Guatemala and Argentina. So I had the language ability and the cultural knowledge and the academic background.
So did you go through any screening, Larry, to get into the CIA?
Oh, yes.
Did you just say, I'd like to be in the CIA, so they hired you?
No,
or did you have to go through some screening?
There were a variety of tests, both written tests and then psychological tests and then interviews. And ultimately, I was selected to participate in what they call the career trainee program. So we were put through a special course that introduced us to all facets of the intelligence agency, and it included folks on the operations side. I was an analyst ultimately, but I did do operational work as part of the training for that first year. One of my classmates was Valerie Plame. We were in training together.
Oh, yes. Valerie Plame, the famous mistreated, outed spy
we can talk about that at some point, but she actually was. She was in charge of four other non-official cover officers when she was exposed.
Okay.
And it really did damage.
That's interesting. Well, that would be an interesting discussion, but we won't go there today unless we run out of time, but I think
sure.
We won't. Larry, when we return, I want to talk to you about a lot of things. I want to ask you what you know about Donald Trump's statements that he was wiretapped by Barack Obama, and what might be behind that, and if that could possibly be true, and if so, how. This is Sandy Rios filling in for Tony Perkins. You're listening to Washington Watch. At T Perkins is the Twitter address for Tony Perkins. I'll get my words straight in a minute. And by the way, I do Sandy Rios in the morning, and if you'd like to join me on Twitter, you can. It's at Sandy Rios tweet. Be right back right after this.
One of the great freedoms that most Americans enjoy is the ability to get involved in political campaigns. But what about pastors? Unfortunately, due to a little-known amendment that was passed in 1954 at President Lyndon Johnson's urging, churches and other nonprofit organizations are prohibited from making statements for or against a candidate for public office if they want to remain tax exempt. This is just one of the many problems with the Johnson Amendment. Not only does fear of IRS action put a chill on the free speech of pastors, it restrains other nonprofit organizations from participating in the debate of public policy in their area of expertise. In addition, the IRS only rarely enforces the Johnson Amendment, causing widespread confusion about what constitutes lawful political speech and what doesn't. For more information on how to amend the Johnson Amendment, visit frc.org/Johnson Amendment. That's frc.org/Johnson Amendment.
Unwholesome television programs and unnatural social agendas. As believers, we use our religious freedoms to take out the trash in the media and society. Even children's magazines are in the crosshairs. Join 1millionmoms.com and take action.
This is Monica Cole of 1 Million Moms. We need you to sign up and speak up for our children at 1millionmoms.com. We are making the difference.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
A charitable gift annuity through the AFA Foundation is an excellent way to provide yourself with guaranteed permanent income while at the same time supporting the American Family Association. Here's what one supporter told us.
I very much want to see God's word continue into the next generation. This is a way I can help AFA spread the truth and promote their biblical stand. My experience with the AFA Foundation continues to remind me that I have a small part in helping AFA in the battle for our nation's values.
Financial planning is essential to your family. A charitable gift annuity through the AFA Foundation is one way you can support AFA and the health of our nation. The planners at the AFA Foundation are here to help you do the most with your finances. You can call us at 800-326-4543, extension 345. Find us on Facebook or email foundation@afa.net. And learn whether a charitable gift annuity is right for you.
All right, this is Washington Watch, and Sandy Rios filling in for Tony Perkins. My guest is Larry Johnson. Larry served with the CIA's Operational Center and was a deputy director in the U.S. State Department Office of Counterterrorism. He was involved in the Pan Am 103 flight investigations and many, many other things in South America. Larry, we could talk for hours. I'd love to know more about all of those things, but let's talk about the issue at hand. Sure. The president of the United States, the sitting president, has accused the past president of wiretapping him. I want to just play a very short clip, if I might, before we talk. Chuck Todd had James Clapper, who's the former director of Defense Intelligence, National Intelligence, he asked him about this, and I just want you to hear what he had to say, then let's talk. Here it is.
If something like that happened, would this be something you would be aware of?
I would certainly hope so. I can say, obviously I can't speak officially anymore, but I will say that for the part of the national security apparatus that I oversaw as DNI, there was no such wiretap activity mounted against the president-elect at the time or as a candidate or against his campaign. I can't speak for other Title III mm-hmm. authorized entities in the government or a state or local entity. Yeah,
All right, so there it is. Larry, so nothing to see here. There was no wiretapping, according to James Clapper. What do you think?
Well, there was. First, we have to recognize the term wiretapping dates all of us. Everybody who uses it or thinks it's relevant shows you how old you are. So, you know, I confess I'm 62. and it goes back to an age when the only way the FBI or even the CIA could get information from about what somebody else was talking about on a telephone was to physically tap into a wire. And, you know, this some of the great CIA operations in Berlin where we tunneled in under the Soviet embassy and tapped into their cables so we could get their information. Well, we're in a brave new world now. We're in a world where you don't have to tap the wire. You can do electronic surveillance. So it was, I think, Trump inartfully used the term wiretapped. The question is, if you go back and just read the pages of the New York Times and the Washington Post over the last 3 months, they have repeatedly stated that Trump and his associates were being, quote, wiretapped and subjected to electronic surveillance. Now, this leads into another issue. Was this electronic surveillance authorized through a judicial process, through the FISA court, where the FBI had to come in and present a warrant, or where the Department of Justice could have gone before that court without the FBI's participation and sought to surveil or listen in on both computer and telephonic communications? But there's another way this can be done, because the National Security Agency has an agreement with the British counterpart, which is called GHCQ. And there is a two-way sharing agreement between our countries where it is not illegal for GHCQ to listen in on your conversation here and report what you say as an American citizen, because you're a foreigner as far as they are concerned. Similarly, we can listen in on Brits, and it's not against our law to listen in on Brits. That's what the intelligence agencies do. But what this does is it creates a loophole where somebody in this country could actually go to GHCQ, their head, and convince them that they needed to do some listening in on people like Mike Flynn and people like Donald Trump and other associates to see if they were up to something that was not right. Now, would Barack Obama direct that be done? No, I don't think so. What I'm told is actually that originated with someone out at the CIA, and I was told it was John Brennan. Now, I have no proof of that, but I'm just telling you what I've heard from people who are inside in positions of who would know, say that Brennan went back channel to GHCQ and at the head of GHCQ agreed to collect and pass that information on and back to Brennan outside of channels, but that Barack Obama was aware of this. So now we get to the lawyer language. This is, recalls Bill Clinton claiming that he never had sex with that woman because it depends on what the meaning of his is. So in this case, did Barack Obama order it? Well, no, I don't think he did. Was Barack Obama, a constitutional scholar, by the way, aware that this took place? I guarantee you he was. He was knowledgeable about it to that extent, and what he should have done was called John Brennan in and Jim Clapper and fired him. Because what we've had going on here for the last 8 months is, the best way I can describe it is, it's an attempted coup. It's an effort where we've seen our intelligence agencies actually meddle in the domestic political process. And it's dangerous. It's a very dangerous precedent.
Larry, I just want to run this by you, because my national security friends said this, and I'd like to know what you think, that it is not the CIA's purview to do all this sophisticated electronic surveillance. You know, a lot of that came out about going through Samsungs and all of that. That whole program has developed under John Brennan since, I believe they said, 2009. That's yes. Really the NSA's purview.
It used to be. And that's the relevance of this WikiLeaks, the latest WikiLeaks from Julian Assange's outfit. You know, it was a thing called Crypt 7, Vault 7. And what that exposed was the fact that the CIA now has both a computer and electronic surveillance capability comparable to what the NSA has, but not subject to the same kind of controls that the NSA has. And I mean, just a very simple example. One of the capabilities exposed is called Umbridge. And what Umbridge does is it allows U.S. hackers to go in and hack a system and leave fingerprints so people will think that it was done by the Russians or the Chinese or the Iranians. Well, when we go back and look at the so-called hack of the information on the DNC computer, one of the fingerprints that was left that led all these analysts say, oh, this was the Russians, is because the name of Felix Edmunovich Dzerzhinsky appeared. Well, Dzerzhinsky was the first head of the secret police in the Soviet Union back in 1920. So who in the world, if the Russian, if the Russians are really hacking the computer, who leaves the fingerprint with Russian Dershinsky? That'd be like the U.S. doing a hacking and leaving the term George Washington. Like, oh, they'll never figure out it's us.
Or J. Edgar Hoover.
It's just, it's so absurd. So now with the knowledge that the CIA actually has this capability, it raises real questions about who was actually behind this effort to tie Trump to the Russians. And why would somebody want to do that?
Well, let's talk about James Clapper, because I asked you earlier how you got in the CIA, and I was leading up to a question. Let me tell you that my husband's former FBI, and I remember he told me one of the questions he had to answer was, are you now or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party? Did you ever have to answer a question like that?
Oh, yes. I also used to, when I joined, they required us to take a polygraph on whether or not we were homosexual.
Okay, so, but on the Communist Party thing, my understanding, and I know this for a fact, I covered this on my show a few months ago, James Clapper met with the Black Caucus and other assorted people. He was speaking with them, and he told them that he voted for the Communist Party candidate for president in 1980. And he laughed about it, and he said, so, if you in this room have something in your past, something that you've done that you think might not pass muster, not to worry, because look at me. I voted for the communist candidate for president in 1980, and I'm head of the CIA. Now, that's troubling to me, Larry. How in the world does a man like that ever get in the CIA?
Well, these are not character positions, unfortunately. I mean, I've got a good friend of mine who was the chief of the Middle East Division at the Defense Intelligence Agency when Clapper was the chief. And needless to say, Clapper, there's a lot in Clapper's background and in his private life that's not known. That if it was known and publicized, he wouldn't be allowed to serve in these jobs. But we already demonstrated, he already demonstrated that he lied under oath to the Congress about the question of whether or not there was eavesdropping on American citizens. And once that lie was exposed, he wasn't forced to resign. There was no accountability. And that's one of the things that's really been lacking in Washington, D.C., is people are not held accountable for what they do. In fact, oftentimes, the more bad you do, sometimes you get promoted.
Oh, that's the truth.
I know. It's really a perverse system.
I know. Hey, I want to make sure I didn't misspeak. I did say John Brennan was the one who spoke for the Black Caucus, right?
Oh, no, you said Clapper. But
that's I was afraid what you came back with. Okay, I want to make that clear. It was John Brennan, who was the director of the CIA, who has overseen this burgeoning of these electronic security of capabilities that are not controlled like the NSA are regulated. And so that's what, I'm sorry, I'm glad I tracked back. John Brennan is who I'm talking about. So
yeah,
John Brennan.
You know what, he joined the CIA back around that period in 1980. He was, he initially came in, he wanted to be an ops officer, but he was sort of bounced out of that because he didn't do a very good job. However, he served twice in Saudi Arabia, and I think that's very relevant to this, because when you consider the fact that one of Donald Trump's policy positions was working with the Russians in Syria to defeat ISIS, and then when you understand that the reason the United States has been providing covert aid to Islamic radicals in Syria, including groups related to Al-Qaeda, to fight against the government of Syria's Assad, then you begin to understand that the main policy, one of the big ones pushing that policy, have been Saudi Arabia. So Brennan is really in sync with the Saudis on this particular policy. And here was Donald Trump talking about working with the Russians to defeat these radical Islamists. And so the thing that Brennan didn't have it in any way, some interest in trying to help take out Trump, would be, I think, a little naive.
Well, he is very partisan, and again, I'm going to underscore this since I made a mistake. He was the head of the CIA. He was a very partisan Obamaite. He's the one that voted for the Communist Party candidate in 1980, bragging that he did that, encouraging others to apply to the CIA because it didn't matter so much what they did in the past because, ha-ha, look what he had done. And I have heard it said that under John Brennan, the CIA, well, look, we've had some of the greatest leaks. We've had who's the guy overseas who's in Russia. We've had Ed Snowden.
He was working with NSA, really. But he had information about CIA. You know, you're right about what you say about Brennan as far as, you know, he really damaged the CIA, in my estimation. He made it what they called the Central Diversity Agency as opposed to the Central Intelligence Agency. And so the primary objective became hiring people based upon either sexual orientation or ethnic background without any regard to whether or not they actually had skills that would function well in collecting and recruiting, basically learning how to recruit spies and get them to work for you.
Larry, is there any way, they're demanding now that Donald Trump prove what he said. Is there any way to prove what you have sort of alluded to, that behind closed doors, different method of surveilling Trump Tower?
Yeah, I think that's what's going to come out, and I think next week when Devin Nunes and the House Intelligence Committee begin to get into this, is there going to be some very specific questions asked, because there's no doubt that there was electronic surveillance of Trump. The question is going to be is who ordered it. For example, who authorized the initial attempts to get FISA warrants? Somebody had to sign off on that. Whose decision was that? What was the basis for that decision? There's a paper trail on that. Who authorized the use of Mike Flynn's name in a conversation with the Russian ambassador? That should not have been leaked. And that certainly, and you know, the New York Times reports that was briefed to the White House. Well, when you're briefing something to the White House, I don't think you're going over there to tell the butler or the cleaning lady what's going on. I think it was the President of the United States, who was then Barack Obama.
And I want to add, you mentioned this, but I want to be specific. It was the January 20th edition of the New York Times that claimed in its headline that Trump Tower was being wired, and they used the word wiretap in the headline. Yeah. So and now they're saying that he's
crazy for thinking that he's being, you know, so if he's being wiretapped, it'd be natural for him to assume, well, heavens, the President had to authorize that, or at least, you know, and again, we get into the wordplay of did Barack Obama pick up the phone and call somebody and tell him to do it? Well, no. But for him to pretend that the President's just sitting there as a passive observer with no idea what's going on is just absurd.
Larry, we're almost out of time, but I'd love to have talked to you about what's happened to the agency since you left. I'm sure you have a lot to say about that. Is there any way to pull this thing back? Do you think new appointees are going to be able to kind of clean out the system a little bit and bring some integrity back?
I think Mike Pompeo, I don't know the man, I've had no experience with him, but what I'm hearing from people on the inside is he has made the initial right moves. And he did convene a meeting of the senior intelligence officers, pulled them into a room, and he used the very phrase. He says, this is not the Central Diversity Agency. This is going to be the Central Intelligence Agency, and we're going to promote people based upon what they do to help identify sources, recruit sources, and gather valuable intelligence for the United States. I think that's an important move.
One thing, more thing, the 30 seconds only. Do you know a lot about the Russians? They were our great enemy when you were serving. So you know their character. You've surveilled, I'm sure. Do you think they really interfered with our elections? And if so, do you think they would have done it to the benefit of Donald Trump?
No and no. We need to have a longer discussion about Russia, but I think there's a deliberate effort underway in this country right now to paint them as the enemy, and they're not the enemy.
Yes, well, you know, I agree with you, and certainly not the great enemy they once were. I mean, they once were. We've got so many enemies that are so much more, like Iran, for instance. Shall we talk about Iran? You know, we've got North Korea. We have apparent enemies. Russia is more of a passive opponent to us, but I don't think it's just an unbelievable thing to see the way this thing has been twisted and
yes.
to the disadvantage of the impression on President Donald Trump. So, hey, Larry, it's great to meet you and great to have this time with you. I hope that you and I can speak again. Larry Johnson. All right, me
Thank
too.
You.
Thanks a lot. All right, well, this has been Sandy Rios filling in for Tony Perkins on Washington Watch. And, of course, you can go to frc.org for more information, at T. Perkins for the Twitter account. You can find me at Sandy Rios in the morning, 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, or at Sandy Rios Tweet. I think I got it all in. Listen, have a great day.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.
872-7234.